"He," Jeb said, flying in front of it, feeling a lot like one of the fairies himself as he taunted the creature. "Pip one!" He shot it right in the nose. Just as Jeb had feared, the mind bullet failed to penetrate. Matter of fact, it ricocheted off, whizzing into the distance to no effect. This must be one of those level 50 monsters the fairies told me about. It snorted and shook its head, dim eyes refocusing on Jeb. He gave the gigantic monster the finger. Jeb didn't know if it was the mind bullet or the finger, but he liked to think that flipping the giant monster off is what made it charge him, trying to bite him out of the air. Jeb had an especially uncomfortable view of the creature's mouth as he flitted out of the way of its savage bites. The inside was pink with dark blue barbs coming off of its gums, facing backwards, designed to prevent prey from escaping once they were in its maw. "How the fuck am I supposed to kill this thing?" Jeb demanded to himself, carefully going through his choices as he led it farther away from the oak tree. Until he heard a scream in the distance. He glanced past the gnashing teeth and spotted more monsters coming out of the sky to land in the clearing, orienting on Casey and Smartass. "Damn it." Jeb released the creature's head and sent his mist over to Casey, covering her in a small, powerful dome of force. Freed from hindrance, the creature's snapping lunges grew even more frantic. "You want a taste of me? Fine." Jeb wrapped himself in an egg of force and shoved himself directly into the creature's mouth. "Room full of Charlies." Jeb exploded with telekinetic blades and mind bullets, 360 degrees of destruction from the crown of his head to the soles of his feet. Every direction. Jeb had created the trigger with being imprisoned in a camp full of hostiles in mind. But being swallowed whole worked too. There was an eruption of blood around him, drenching him through his shattered telekinetic egg. Jeb re-upped his flight and dragged himself out of the creature's ruined mouth, exiting through the mangled lower jaw rather than crossing the teeth and fighting the barbs. He shot out into the air, leaving the collapsing titan behind him as he approached the smaller monsters clawing the shield around Casey and scaring the poor girl witless. A white tiger, lamprey dragon, and raptor-looking thing were taking turns trying to peel the protective barrier away from the pantless girl. Jeb swooped in, pointing a finger at the leftmost creature. "Mark of Cain!" Mind bullets started pouring out 25 a second as the cascade of mystic triggers unraveled. Jeb drew an arc through the three creatures, carefully avoiding the girl. Each of the monsters got 6 or so bullets puncturing its torso, the other 80 lost into the environment. There's a reason they call it spray and pray. The white tiger went down, a hole in its heart, but the other two looked at him and snarled. The white lamprey dragon was bleeding a white goop from its side as it lunged up at him, its stubby claws finding purchase in the goddamn air. Flying? Not fair, Jeb thought hypocritically as he floated backwards, leading the creature away while the raptor chased after him on the ground. Every second he let them bleed themselves out, the better his odds. Jeb dropped his flight, ducking under the squirmy lamprey dragon. He used the mist thread to form a mind bullet and shoved it through the charging raptor's face. That did the trick. Now, Jeb's thoughts were cut off as a slippery tail smacked into his head, nearly crumpling his spine as it sent him hurtling to the ground. Jeb hit earth in an explosion of dust and pain, head groggy and seeing stars. Keep moving. He shoved himself up into the side an instant before the lamprey's mouth gouged out a trough of dirt where he'd been lying. Jeb quickly scanned the surroundings. He didn't see any more monsters. I'm gonna risk it. He released the dome of force around Casey and siphoned 2 new threads of mist, sucking the corona of energy around his star until it was empty, jettisoning it out into the world. Jeb's threads of mist came out pretty chonkin' as he sent both of them up to the eel-shaped dragon bearing down on him. Your flesh looks soft, he thought, seizing the creature's bones with one thread and everything else with the other. He could feel the creature's internal mist fighting against his, but it felt like a baby bird struggling in his cupped hands. The creature's bones began to show against its soft skin as he began to pull the threads apart, causing it to writhe in pain. In a move he'd learned from Mortal Kombat, Jeb tore out the eel's flexible spine. Jeb tossed the two halves of the monster aside and hopped over to Casey. His peg leg had wandered off somewhere, so he finally picked himself up and glided the last dozen feet over to her side. "And how are we doing?" he asked, giving his most professional, calm tone of voice despite being covered in viscera.
"I think I can see the hat,"
Smartass cried, trying not to throw up.
"So much blood."
"Oh, I can feel something,"
Casey groaned, unaware of the fairy, keeping an eye on the situation.
"I think it's coming."
Her eyes widened.
"Above you."
Jeb raised his left hand, fingers splayed as wide as he could get them. The shield deployed just in time to ward off the crash of talons above him.
"Smartass, I gotta deal with this. You got this under control?"
"She pooped on me,"
Smartass shouted, covered from head to toe in stuff, wiping himself off furiously with one of the wet rags.
"Suck it up, Buttercup," Jeb said, using his mist threads to fling the snarling creature away from them.
The other fairies arrived while Jeb was dealing with the monster, carrying rags and several MRE containers full of water. It became a joint effort, with Casey pushing, fairies pulling, and Jeb making sure they didn't get killed by the unceasing onslaught of monsters.
"You have gained a level. You are now level 36.
Jeb was busily murdering the endless stream of creatures attracted to the sound of fighting when he heard the crying of an infant.
"Yes, now we can leave,"
Jeb thought, blasting over to the tree where dozens of fairies were proudly holding the bloody baby above their heads. Smartass standing on top of it like an exultant mountain climber.
"Look,"
Smartass said, thumping his chest.
"At what I have created. I am the bringer of life. I claim this human as my own and shall call her..."
Casey looked highly confused about the way her baby was seemingly floating in midair, and she scooped it up, not hearing the fairy's indignant protests. Smartass was accidentally sandwiched between the baby and mother, his wings twitching as he struggled to escape.
"Can't stay here," Jeb said, landing beside her and pulling out his knife, cutting the umbilical cord with the confidence of desperation.
Jeb picked her up and wrapped a single thread of mist around the two of them, picking them up and zooming away. Behind them, Jeb felt the air vibrate to the powerful beat of a wing. He glanced behind them and wished he hadn't. A toad-looking creature that dwarfed the other monster swooped over them, its gullet expanding an instant before it dropped a rain of fire above their heads. In a desperate bid to survive, Jeb made a two-layered bubble of air around the two of them, desperate to insulate them for the extra second or two it would take to get out of the clearing. It worked. Jeb and Casey made it out of the clearing, zooming through the forest, safe inside their little bubble of protection.
The fairies, on the other hand.
Jeb glanced back and his heart sank. The entire clearing was on fire. The great oak carrying the entire mossy oak in the clearing clan was ablaze, burning like it had been doused with napalm.
"Son of a bitch!"
Jeb gritted his teeth and put on more speed, aiming to lose pursuit in the woods. There was nothing he could do for them now. He'd known it was dangerous to stay there, but he'd done it anyway. Too dangerous to move a woman in labor. Didn't want to get ambushed searching for Jessica and company. Those thoughts had gotten people who'd helped him killed. "I should have just left and taken her with me." Jeb took a deep breath, locked those thoughts away, and refocused on the now. Now he had to get Casey and baby to the rest of the group and get them somewhere safe. Get Amanda to look after them, make sure they didn't die over the next couple hours.
"Aw, fuck, I left my cane."
The cane was certainly destroyed, whether it be from fairy overuse or simply being burned to a crisp by toad/dragon fire.
"You better be worth it,"
Jeb thought, glaring vindictively at the nursing baby. Chapter 15. Cheese, the Healer. It took Jeb a little over 10 minutes to track down his team. Since they'd been weaving around conflicts the entire time, they were a little off course from where he thought they'd be. They seemed surprised to see him. Jeb took a wild guess that it was because of the copious amounts of blood and the naked teen and her baby.
"Is she hurt?"
Amanda demanded, jumping up on the zombie hulk palanquin as he alighted beside her.
Probably not. I just wanted you to watch her, make sure she doesn't have some kind of bad turn.
I can do that,
Amanda said, jumping off the palanquin and running over to the luggage. She grabbed a cloak and sprinted back, wrapping it around the sleepy-looking Casey in a professional manner. She was shifting the baby a bit to tuck the cloak around the two of them when Smartass squirmed out, heaving a huge gasp of air.
I live,
he shouted, unfurling his wings in a power pose. Amanda squeaked before hauling back to smack the little guy. Jeb caught it a moment before she made contact, stopping her hand with a gentle cloud of mist. He's a friend, Jeb said, picking up Smartass and putting the fairy on his shoulder. Ron watched the exchange with a chuckle. The three mist users in the party could all see the fairy perfectly well, but Brett and Jess were unaware of what was going on.
What happened? Brett asked.
Got bogged down, Jeb said, relaxing. Casey was ready to pop, so we had to stop and deliver the baby. Except the monsters caught wind of it.
He glanced at Brett.
You can't afford to stop for anything. They don't stop coming. Not anymore. First thing we gotta do is find somewhere they won't go, or else they're gonna wear us down to nothing.
Jeb said, pointing to the west.
Let's start with the Fire Mountain. Worst case scenario, we can seal ourselves in a cave to sleep.
Aren't those caves filled with fire?
Ron asked. Jeb shrugged. Not all of them.
Well, I wish you fellas luck with that,
Smartass said, standing on Jeb's shoulder and flexing his wings, drawing the attention of the spellcasters.
I gotta get back to my acorn commodities business. Hopefully that ruckus scared away the devil squirrels.
Jeb winced. Smartass had been buried between baby and boob when his entire tribe had been toasted. He still didn't know.
Now,
Smartass said, putting his hand under Jeb's nose, wiggling his fingers greedily.
Payment for helping deliver that baby. I take payment in rare metals, candy, acorn, or lenses. Unless you want the girl to settle her debt herself with her...
Smartass adopted a spooky, melodramatic voice.
Firstborn.
Jeb reached into his vest and pulled out a Snickers and passed it to the fairy. It was his last one.
Seed money.
Smartass said, petting the candy bar with a malicious grin that split his face.
It's been nice knowing you, chumps. Next time we see each other, I'll be head of a multinational syndicate.
Smartass made to fly away, but Jeb gently stopped him with a cloud of mist.
What?
Smartass demanded, turning to face him and clutching the candy bar possessively.
You already gave it to me. No take-backsies. Wait, do corporations have take-backsies?
I just wanted to tell you something, Jeb said. No matter what happens with your corporate empire, you'll always have a place with me. If things don't work out, I'll help you get back on your feet. I owe you that much.
Smartass peered at him suspiciously for a moment, his face dark. A moment later, he grinned.
Okay.
Smartass zoomed up into the sky, lugging the heavy Snickers bar beneath him.
What the hell was that?
Brett asked, mouth slack.
Fairies,
Ron said, shaking his head.
I wish I'd thought of the candy angle. I just ate most of it.
They kept on heading westward, avoiding combat as much as possible, streaming along at a human sprinting speed, carried by the zombies. There was something to be said about the fact that they didn't get tired or slow down, no matter how long they went. While they moved, they talked strategy.
Have any of you guys ever played Fire Emblem or Final Fantasy Tactics? Or any tactics game?
Ron asked as they were fielding ideas. Jeb shrugged.
I played a bit of my brother's Nintendo, but I didn't get very far,
Brett said.
Okay, there's this tactic that always works,
Ron said, glancing at Amanda.
I call it cheesing the healer.
So we use her as bait?
Jeb asked, unable to understand why they would cover her in cheese.
What? No!
Ron stared at him agog.
All right, so here's how it goes. The healer is the anchor of any team, As soon as the healer goes down, you're basically fucked. So people tend to keep them in the back and only use them when necessary.
Sounds reasonable, Jeb said.
Except,
Ron said, raising a finger,
that behavior stagnates the healer's growth. They wind up puny and underleveled. My favorite thing to do is give my healer all the extra growth items, spring for the extra powerful weapons and armor, and put them right in the thick of things until they're basically untouchable. And if the healer is untouchable, that pretty much guarantees a win.
So what are you suggesting?
We should power level Amanda until she can fight better than Brett, he said. She's under level 20 with no class ability. Making her tougher and better at fighting would be a huge benefit to our party.
You think you could do that, Amanda? Jeb asked.
I'm against violence, she said, wincing.
Real world's a bit different from a video game, Jeb said, glancing at Ron.
But if it helps save my husband's life, she said, glancing at Brett, I'll kill whatever I have to.
Boom!
Ron pantomimed a mic drop. Casey needs leveling too, Jeb said, glancing at the sleeping teen with the messed up hair. I'm fairly sure she couldn't have got past level 20 that hugely pregnant.
Stands to reason. If she's at least strong enough to run away, that'll be a huge benefit, Brett said.
And you, Jeb said, singling Brett out. You have any mist? Brett shook his head. We're going to get you some. We can't have you being blind and deaf to half the stuff going on around you. And mist abilities are powerful. Your soldier ability is absolutely no good in a fight, so we're going to want to supplement that.
That isn't so much cheese the healer as it is power level everyone, Ron said with a shrug.
They need it.
True, but do we have the time to...
Jeb showed him his scarab lens. Food. He pulled out the water lens he'd traded for. Water. All we need is shelter. That's what we're looking for on the mountain. He glanced over to the mountain in the distance, smoke gently rising off of it. Once we have those three things, we can take as long as we have to. We'll start with Amanda. Then, once she's in her late 20s, we'll switch gears and focus on getting Casey up to snuff. If Casey winds up as baggage, nobody wins. He glanced at Ron. Sound good? Ron nodded. Amanda nodded.
Sounds good, Jessica said.
Yeah, I'm not exactly comfortable putting Amanda in danger, but making her damn near impossible to kill sounds like a good decision,
Brett said, adding his agreement to theirs. They kept working on the particulars as they fled the gradually expanding swarm of monsters. Later. Nearly 8 tense hours later, the forest began to thin out. Jess frowned.
You guys see that?
She asked, pointing at the fiery mountain. See what? Jeb said, peeling one eye open. He'd been catching some sleep since the monotonous rocking of the palanquin had started making him nod off.
There's something different on the mountain,
Jess said, staring. Jeb sat up and peered at the mountain, but neither he nor any of the others on the team could make out what she described to them until about 15 minutes had gone by, bringing them closer to the bald mountain. There was a large opening in the side of the mountain with a flat top and sides. A gate? Jeb thought, frowning as it slowly grew larger. It disappeared behind individual hills, but every time they crested one, it got bigger. It went from a pinprick to a thumbnail to a fist. Finally, they stood in front of it, an enormous gate seemingly carved into the stone, leading deep into the mountain itself. It had gouts of flame rising off the sides, seemingly manifesting from nothing.
That's definitely new, Jeb said, staring up at it.
He glanced back over to the forest below them. The swarm of flying monsters had completely taken over the forest, only moving when the world tortoise took another earth-flattening step, sending up a cloud of creatures like flies on a disturbed carcass. Right now, the tortoise was eating enormous old oak trees like heads of broccoli, chewing with a glazed look. They didn't seem interested in going up the mountain, thank God.
The creatures filling the sky seemed to fly around the flaming mountain, giving the smokestack and everything below it a wide berth. This might just work. Jeb squared his shoulders and took a step toward the enormous hole in the side of the mountain. Or we all die a horrible death. But that was always on the table. He stepped into the darkness that seemed to fold around him.
You have entered a dungeon. Grave of the Titan.
It's a dungeon, Jeb said, stepping back out.
Last one I went into was a death trap. Let's find a different place to sleep.
No matter how convenient its appearance, Jeb knew that it was no place for an infant and a mother. Matter of fact, Jeb was suspicious of it because of its convenience. He'd flown all over these mountains just a day before the safe zones dropped. He or Jessica should have seen something. That night, they slept in a tiny cave, the five of them crushed together by necessity while Ron's zombies formed an unliving wall at the narrow entrance. Jeb couldn't help but be a tiny bit envious of the baby, the only one who wasn't pressed up against a rock one way or another. The morning came, and they had water and roasted scarabs for breakfast. Before they got started with their plan to cheese the healer, there were some experiments Jeb wanted to run first. He wanted to see how difficult it was to pick up or move someone's body against their will using his mist. When he used the ability on Brett, it was like a bird in the hand, similar to the lamprey dragon. When he used it on Jessica, she felt more like a struggling cat, squirmy but not particularly hard. With Amanda, her resistance felt like wrestling a full-grown woman, difficult but not impossible. The amount of time spent forcing his mist through hers would easily open him up to counterattack, though, so telekinesis wasn't an efficient way to go about it. When Jeb tried to pick Ron off the ground against his will, it felt like he'd called Schwarzenegger a sissy. I think it's fair to say that the difficulty of using your mist ability on another person is related to the strength of their mist core, Jeb said, sweat beating on his brow. Ron didn't look much better off, having fought tooth and nail to stay on the ground. Note to self, mist users are going to require indirect methods to deal with from now on. Once Jeb got that little experiment out of the way, they arranged their jobs. Amanda, Brett, and Jeb were the power leveling team, while Ron and Jessica stayed and kept the cave safe. Jeb was fairly sure that she still found Ron suspicious, eyeing the ginger out of the corner of her eye while the necromancer wasn't looking. Either that or she had a crush on the kid. They are about the same age, Jeb thought, glancing at his own weather-worn hands. Kesara, she's only the prettiest girl I've seen in ages. Casey was also on cave detail, though her hands were mostly full taking care of baby Casey. That's gonna cause some confusion. But Casey wanted her daughter to be called Casey Thompson III, so Jeb didn't argue with it. The exercise program for their healer was to stack up as many unique fights with monsters as possible, coming at them from every angle Amanda could manage. The logic was such. Each person who currently had a class was offered three classes based on their performance within the tutorial, or failing that, their personal history, the result of some outstanding achievement, or their favored manner of fighting. So, it stood to reason if they decked her out in the fantastical full plate the zombies had been carrying and had her kill some monsters, she might get an armor-oriented class. Or if she killed some creatures without armor, with her bare hands, she might get the opportunity to take a class that made armor unnecessary. It took a few days of Jeb literally plucking monsters out of the sky or the woods below and tossing them on the ground for her to fight, but eventually Amanda got the hang of it. They had her fight in armor, without armor, even a nude brawl against a low-level monster, bludgeoning it to death with her bare hands in the hopes that she'd get a rare class for it. That fight was awkward. Jeb had to watch carefully so he could intervene if it looked like she was about to lose. Brett and Amanda seemed less worried about it, but still. They also tried archery and trapling at Jeb's suggestion. If Amanda got the Mystic Trapsmith class, I would be absolutely thrilled. The ability to set aside packets of healing to be used at a moment's notice would be invaluable. He even knew how to unlock it. But creating a trap using healing magic was a bit of a stretch. He couldn't think of any reasonable way to pull it off. Some gimmick with skin tension? Who knows? Jeb thought with a shrug.
Jeb asked around if anyone knew how Eddie had gotten his class, but the consensus was that while Eddie had been stupid, he hadn't been stupid enough to tell other people how he'd gotten his class. 3 days of battle later, and Amanda had her class selection. Due to them carefully varying her fighting style, Amanda wound up with 6 different selections. Apparently, 3 class selections was the minimum, and most people didn't have the luxury to experiment with things that might not work. 1. Celebrant of Sabrin, A. 2. Mystic Archer, B. 3. Ironskin Brawler, B. 4. Healer, C. 5. Courtesan, D. 6. Companion, D. The first 3 were earned recently through Amanda's power leveling, while the bottom 3 related to what she'd been doing in and around the camp during the first 3 weeks. The Celebrant class was the rarest, and it offered a substantial bonus to body, along with a smaller boost to mist and nerve. It also came with an attack ability and a passive boost to armor. Amanda balked at reading the description of the class aloud, saying it was on the table but waving off any further questions. The Mystic Archer was similar to the Mystic Trapsmith, allowing her to infuse her arrows with her magic. Jip thought that was an amusing image, shooting people to heal them, but when Ron mentioned they might be able to bypass the restrictions by using a blowgun and needles, he took the class more seriously. It offered a decent boost to mist and nerve, with a smaller bonus to body. Ironskin Brawler was exactly what it sounded like, giving the healer the ability to strengthen her own skin at will. It offered a large bonus to body and a small bonus to nerve. Healer's ability added more utility to her mist powers, giving her a passive bonus to heal others as well as the ability to recognize and treat ailments above and beyond simple injuries, including diseases and poisons. It came with a decent boost to mist. Courtesan was discarded along with Companion. The 2 classes were pure support and did very little to help her defend herself. They suffered an hour or so of decision paralysis, but Amanda eventually chose the Celebrant of Sabrin, the only class with a well-defined bonus to her ability to attack, as well as good stat increases. She apologized to Jeb for not taking Healer, as that would have likely been the shortest path to him getting his leg back. "You act like you cut it off yourself," he said, waving her off. "I can fly. I'll be fine." They weren't done after she got the class, though. They swaddled Amanda up in armor again, noting how much easier she moved in it than before. And the attack ability. Amanda's entire body would glow with a soft light moments before she charged forward and split some unlucky creature in half, where before she struggled to pierce their hide. Not bad. They were returning for the day when Jeb heard fluttering off to the side and spotted Smartass, with a hobo bindle full of acorns over his shoulder, 5 or 6 maybe, and an empty Snickers wrapper being used as a tunic. He landed on Jeb's palm, his expression hollow. "How'd it go?" Jeb asked.
"I was on top of the world, human. Naturally, I was distraught about the loss of my clan, but I decided to forge ahead. I joined a new clan. The things you taught me made me a god among the free folk. I had the world in my hand," he said, shaking a tired fist. "There I was, snorting lines of pollen off the back of a rhapsody beetle. I could have anyone or anything I wanted. I was powerful. My company was expanding rapidly, turning over clan after clan to my control. I had supply lines that stretched from one end of the forest to the other."
He heaved a heavy sigh.
"We even had plans underway to establish contact with fairies from the next country over. Corner the market. Consolidate. Leverage our assets?"
"So what happened?" Jeb asked.
"One minute I was snorting pollen. The next minute, the ungrateful bastards were throwing me in prison for embezzlement. I rotted there in that hollow log with the scum of the forest. I got hard. I got mean, just to survive."
Smartass gave the mountain a 1,000-yard stare.
"After what felt like years, they finally let me out, but my company was already in someone else's hands. And believe me, I wasn't keen on hanging around watching someone else in my seat snorting my pollen, so I got the hell out of there. I spent the next 3 days after that looking for you."
The next 3 days?
We've only been here 3 days.
You created and subsequently cheated a company that spanned the entire forest, then did hard time.
In 1 day? Jeb asked.
You humans lack the focus to get anything done quickly, Smartass said, rolling his eyes. Ooh, what's that?
Chapter 16. Optics.
Check this out,
Jessica said, tugging Jeb off to the side.
What is it?
He asked, stumbling a bit as his new peg leg slipped. Jess handed him Razorback.
Take a swing at me, she said.
Jeb glanced down at the brutal black jagged long blade in his hand, briefly considering protesting, but that was just a waste of time at this point. Jeb shrugged.
Okay.
He took a sideways swipe at the stubble-headed assassin. In the blink of an eye, blackened steel gauntlets snapped into place in her hands, allowing her to catch the sword with her palms and wrench it out of his hands, nearly toppling him over.
Nice,
Jeb said, blowing on his stinging hands.
I can do it for my head and feet as well, but anything bigger than that is going to take more mist.
Did you try making a weapon or enchanted gear yet?
Jessica flicked her hand and a throwing star whizzed into the distance and sank into a rock before it began to gradually fade away.
It's not permanent. I wonder why creatures are permanent then. Does that answer your question?
Color me impressed, Jeb said.
I can't do enchanted gear yet, Jessica said with a shrug. But I feel like it's possible, just too expensive to do with my current mist reserves.
Jeb nodded. Brett and Casey Sr. were sitting outside the cave entrance, which had been cleared into a cozy little campsite. Both the aging fitness model and the team mom were sitting cross-legged, focusing on starting their mist core. The last of Casey's goth makeup had been washed away, and now she just looked like the girl next door. Her hair was still black as night, though, and her attitude hadn't improved much, glaring at every man in the camp like they represented the patriarchy. The only time he saw her crack a smile was when she was cooing to Casey Jr.
One thing they don't tell you about babies? Newborns are ugly.
Right now, Casey was soul-searching in an attempt to unlock her mist abilities, which should help her kill monsters. The teen girl was even less prepared to power level than Amanda had been. Amanda had the benefit of experience and a few body-enhancing potions. Casey's stats were as such. Casey Thompson. Body 13, mist 4, nerve 8. The girl hadn't gotten a single level. Her inhuman stats were from the bonus 15 points at the beginning, which probably saved her life. She'd started putting them in mist one at a time, then stopped when she started getting horrible headaches and seeing scary things, putting most of the rest into body and a little into nerve. Once Casey figured out her mist ability, they would be able to guide her toward a class that synergized with it. In theory. Jeb spent the morning working on altering Amanda's armor to fit her better, as well as working on a few of his own devices, while watching the Mist boot camp members hard at work. The armor they got from Amanda was a rare animal. It was a full suit of armor that looked as though it had been taken straight out of a video game. This led to several problems with its functionality. The shoulder pads were huge, obnoxious things that would never work in reality. They had to remove them just for her to be able to lift her arms above her head, the main reason the armor had been sold. The armor was also heavier than a normal human had any right to be able to move in. That problem was largely solved by Amanda's superhuman strength, but being heavier than it needed to be served nearly no purpose. So Jeb was sitting there using BSF, Blue Serpent Furnace, to heat up the tons of fancy ornaments dangling from every part of the armor until they were white hot, and shaving them off with telekinetic force. It was almost like whittling down a block of wood, except for the extreme heat blasting Jeb in the face as he worked. Once he had all the extraneous decorations off, he started fitting the armor to Amanda's measurements, heating the metal cherry red and bending it with telekinesis. He made a mistake here and there and had to patch it, but there was gobs of material to work with sitting right next to him, and the furnace was the most precise heating and welding tool he'd ever had the pleasure of working with. Jeb had found a little workaround to the problem of being unable to bend an object. As long as he kept the force external, it was a simple matter to bend something.
Jeb wanted to add the mist engine to his furnace, but the mist coming out of it wasn't telekinetic. So even if he could make a permanent flame, he couldn't make the telekinetic aspect of the item self-sustaining. Oh well, it's still awesome. Once he was done with Amanda's armor, Jeb got around to making Ron a better tool for self-defense. He carved the necromancer's geysering flame lens into the right shape for the fire to manifest all in the same spot, then experimented, using a worm lens to calibrate exactly where the fire would manifest. Once all that was done, he put it on the end of a 10-foot pole. Safety first. "You want to do the honors?" Jeb asked, handing Ron the pole.
"What are we talking here?"
Ron asked, grabbing the pole, grinning like an idiot.
"Fireball? Flaming arrow? Flame beams?"
"Flamethrower," Jeb said simply.
"Aw."
Ron pouted at the common nature of his magic item.
"We could pull that off with a super soaker and a gallon of gas."
"Maybe, but we don't have any more lenses to modify the way this one works. As far as I know, the only thing we can do with it is have it create fire at the focal point. That's it." Ron frowned.
"I guess we'll see what we got."
He held the 10-foot pole way out, and Jeb saw him thread a tiny bit of his neon purple mist into the lens at the end. Boom! Jeb and Ron were catapulted backward, tumbling through the air until they landed on the barren mountainside. Jeb smelled burned hair as he tried to sit up, trying to blink the huge black spot out of his eyes. Through the ringing in his ears, he could hear Casey the Third crying.
"It did say," Ron said, coughing, "that it was energetic."
"Damn it, Ron, how much did you use?"
"You saw me," Ron shot back. "Barely a drop."
The necromancer held up the steel pole and they noticed the front half was faintly glowing with heat. After desperately setting it down to check the lens, they were relieved to find that flame lenses weren't flammable. Go figure.
"Maybe you two would like to take the explosions farther away from the baby," Casey said in a way that was distinctly not a question.
"Yes, ma'am," Jeb said, nodding before he scooped up the pole and retreated.
"Yep, yep, yep, yep."
Ron hustled after Jeb, glancing over his shoulder nervously. Once they were far enough away, they got back to trying to figure out simple mist physics.
"Damn," Ron glanced at Jeb. "I'd say that qualifies as a fireball, not a flamethrower."
"Yeah, but if it always blows up in our face, how do we use it?" Jeb demanded. Ron scrunched up his face in consideration.
"Rangefinder?"
he asked, peering at Jeb. "Yeah, but how do we—" Jeb stopped as an idea occurred to him. "That might work."
"You got something from that?"
"Yep," Jeb said, nodding. "I'm going to see if it's possible to make a sliding focus." Ron squinted. "How do you think lens focusing works?" Jeb asked. "It's just a matter of getting two or more lenses to play nice with each other, I think."
"You sure about that?"
Ron asked, brow furrowed.
Couldn't hurt." "Where are you going to get the lenses?"
Ron asked. "Got any glass on you?" Jeb asked. He could use pieces of the worm lens, but that would be wasteful, especially if his idea didn't pan out.
"Nope."
"And the sand in the ground is way too impure to make any kind of clear glass, even if I could melt it and shape it with the blue serpent furnace. What has the ability to change the way light behaves? Air does it, especially if it's denser. Could I compress air to make temporary lenses? Wait, water refracts light like nobody's business. That would at least allow a proof of concept."
"Got it,"
Jeb said, digging the water lens out of his pocket. He made water-based lenses by filling a piece of hardened air with water. Big lenses about 3 feet on a side so that Jeb and Ron could both crowd their heads around them. "Now, what we want to do here is make it so the mist goes in the primary lens and is converted to rays." Jeb tapped one water lens. "Then somehow the distance between the two lenses sets the focal point."
"Well, obviously they can't both be regular lenses,"
Ron said, putting his hand on the other side of the lens.
"Focal point is right here. The damn thing would explode."
"So
So we make the first lens concave, so it spreads the focus out, then it hits the back lens, which corrects it, Jeb said. Would that do anything more than move the focus of the lens by a couple inches?
Well, you got me, man, but I think we're onto something here.
As it turned out, it was a little more complicated than Jeb thought, but it was still doable. Using the light from the sun as a baseline, they were able to figure out that by making a small, extremely concave lens and a much larger convex lens, Jeb was able to move the focal point drastically by shifting the small concave lens just a little bit back and forth. The final lens had to be so much larger because the extremely concave lens spread out the rays at a terrific rate, and without a larger lens to catch them all, the power would be lost. Or perhaps fire mist would get caught in the tube and melt the container to slag. Whichever. So the closer he got the two lenses together, the farther out the focal point was. And the farther away they were, the closer the focal point was to the two lenses. Perfect. Now, Jeb just needed to prove it worked with the worm lens before he tore Ron's flame lens into several pieces. Jeb knew the same mist could travel through multiple lenses, as evidenced by both the firefly lantern and the furnace he'd made. Now, if it could travel through the same type of lens and alter its focal point, he should easily be able to make a range setter for the geysering flame lens's explosion. On a whim, Jeb switched the positioning of the lenses and found that they behaved exactly the same, if not slightly better. As soon as this tutorial is over, I'm getting a book on optics and reading it cover to cover. College was a long time ago. Once that was taken care of, Jeb made a pair of lenses out of the gargantuan worm lens and spent the next hour trying out different configurations. It turned out poorly at first. The distance was somewhat inconsistent until Jeb thought of using a third lens at the beginning that was perfectly flat to turn the mist from a vapor to a perfectly flat ray. When he added that, the rangefinder stabilized and they were able to get repeatable range adjustments. That taken care of, all Jeb had to do was design a corkscrew internal mechanism that would shift the middle lens back and forth by twisting it. Jeb's inhuman nerve allowed him to picture every part of the contraption and then make each piece using the cast-off shavings from Amanda's armor, injection casting it into telekinetic hollows. Once the machine was done,
"It looks a lot like a spyglass," Ron said, peering at it.
"Or a wand," Jeb said, holding it the other way, the way it was supposed to be held.
"Holy shit, you're right,"
Ron said, eyes widening. "Now, let's figure out the range on this thing." With a twist, the corkscrew inside the narrow tube moved the middle lens back, shortening the focal length until it was presumably right in front of the end of the wand. "All right, let's start with the shortest range," Jeb said, aiming the worm wand in front of him. He put a tiny amount of mist through it. A foot-long worm popped up directly in front of the end of the metal tube. "Label that zero," Jeb muttered to himself, using the furnace to heat the metal and stamp a zero at the collar spot. "Let's aim for," he glanced at Ron, 10 feet?
"Sure."
Jeb twisted the collar, moving the two lenses closer together, popping out worm after worm until they were fairly confident it was popping them out 10 feet away. He stamped 10 into the metal. As they got the two lenses closer together, the range of the focal point increased exponentially. The distance between 0 and 10 was much wider than between 10 and 20, each tiny fraction of an inch moving the focal point farther and farther out. After they confirmed a big worm appearing about 360 feet out, they simply stopped. Moving the lenses any closer than that simply didn't work, likely because the focal point wouldn't stretch any farther than that with their crude contraption. Still, not bad, Jeb thought, imagining the geysering flame lens explosion aimable out to a range of 300 feet. That could come in handy. "I think I'm going to set a minimum range of 20 feet on the flame lens, though," Jeb thought, reviewing the design in his head. Firing it off 10 feet away had nearly caused them some damage.
"Now we need to do some more tests,"
Ron said, petting the worm wand and grinning like the Cheshire Cat.
"See if we can aim this thing more precisely."
"You're thinking about popping a worm into existence in a girl's lap, aren't you?" Ron looked at him, jaw gaping. "Guess I hit the nail on the head.
Kid's pretty obvious. Jeb put a hand on Ron's shoulder and stared into the ginger's eyes. Ron, I'm going to give you some free advice. I haven't tried to prank a girl to get her attention since I was 15. I want you to stop and really think about this for a second. Which is going to go over better? Dropping a big gross worm in her lap or seeing if she's interested in testing the wand with you? Ron swallowed.
When you've put it like that.
Good, Jeb said, patting him on the shoulder and going back to what he was doing. Next step is making an explosive version with the geysering flame lens. Jeb sat back down and pulled out the large lens, picturing how he was going to cut it to maximize the amount of surface area they got out of it. He marked the circles he was going to cut out of the large lens with light scratches, making sure to mark the flat, concave, and convex lenses. Splitting the lenses into three pieces was going to drastically reduce the maximum amount of mist that could travel through the wand without breaking one of the lenses, but that didn't matter too much. The drop of mist that Ron had funneled into the lens the first time had created a devastating explosion, and Jeb was pretty confident that even though the lenses were smaller now, they could still take a lot more than that little drop. Being able to control distance was more important. Jeb split the large lens in half, then carefully crafted two sets of identical lenses, using the furnace to forge the steel of their wands around them. For Ron's, he made it the same as before, albeit making the minimum focal point 20-ish feet. He was interested in pushing his creativity and skill to the limit, so after he was done with Ron's wand, he made another wand as the base. He studied the two metal rods in his hand. Crude training wand of fireball, geysering, uncommon. This training wand has an external mechanical range determiner, so that an amateur mist user can practice controlling their range without accidentally harming themselves. The workmanship is rough, and someone has replaced the cool flame lens with a geysering flame lens, making this training wand far more deadly than it should be. Interesting. The description implied that wands like these already existed, and not only that, it suggested there was a way for a person to control the range of an effect even without the mechanism they'd invented. That's something I should look into. Jeb took the mist capacitor and the mist engine from the scarab trap and started looking for ways to combine them with the wand. The capacitor was blocky, while the engine was small and round. He laid the wand on the ground and arranged the pieces. Wand, then the box-like capacitor, then the engine hanging straight down. Jeb drew an outline around them. That looks like a gun to me. Jeb flipped the capacitor so the trigger mechanism was facing pop. A giant worm appeared in front of Jeb's face, writhing with disapproval. Duh! Jeb swatted the worm out from on top of his work and scanned the surroundings. He could make out some faint, stifled laughter, but he couldn't quite pinpoint where it was coming from. Everybody gets one, Jeb said, loud enough for them to hear him. If it happens again, I'm confiscating it. No more worms. Jeb got back to work. He melted some more steel and built a housing for the capacitor in the engine. Then he took his several feet of fiber optics, cut them to size, and used them to connect the engine and the handle to the capacitor. He spent the next half hour figuring out how to make a decent trigger mechanism. Once it was done, he closed the other side of the handle around it and used the furnace to tack weld it together. All told, it looked a lot like one of those old Nazi pistols, a Luger or a Mauser, or whatever they were called. It had a narrow tube at the front, with a blocky back end and a rotund handle. It didn't look like one of those slick high-tech modern models, that was for sure. Jeb inspected it. Crude gorilla wand of fireball, geysering, uncommon. Favored by rebellious peasants, these cobbled-together wands carry their own stolen power source, and therefore do not require a proper mist user to operate, making them ideal for insurgent forces acting against their rightful rulers. Carrying one of these wands is considered an act of treason in most countries and punishable by death. This one has been enhanced with a geysering flame lens, making it particularly potent. Jeb wasn't immediately concerned with the whole treason thing, although it did worry him a little. He was more interested in the scrap of information he'd been provided. It seemed like mist users were royalty? Or royalty had to be mist users by default? Or mist users were controlled by the government?
There was no telling for sure, but it meant that Jeb was likely going to have an unwelcome amount of attention on himself, should they escape.
I got it,
Casey said, her voice brightening for a moment, the accent slipping through. Jeb glanced over at her. The raven-haired girl's enthusiasm was short-lived, withdrawing faster than he could witness it. She gave him a flat stare.
I got my mist core working,
she said in a monotone. One sec, Jeb said, turning on the safety and turning to address her. What's your mist core do?
Well, I was sitting there getting bored with my eyes closed, she said, rolling her eyes at him. When I thought about the stories my mom told me about Archangel Michael and how he'd vanquish evil with a flaming sword, and he was always watching over us.
Oh, crap.
And then it just clicked, I guess,
Casey said with a sigh. She closed her eyes and concentrated really hard.
Hopefully it's not a pile of shit.
A pillar of light descended from above, nearly blinding Jeb as something descended from above. He couldn't look directly at it, the light was so brilliant. A moment later, the light was gone and Jeb was finally able to open his eyes. The first thing he saw was a cheerful-looking man in a white toga, bearing a flaming sword about the size of a toothpick.
Salutations,
the little winged man said, flapping down to stand on Casey's shoulder. The goth girl froze, looking distinctly uncomfortable with the angel on her shoulder.
My name is Michael, but you can call me Mac,
Mike said, stretching out his hand. Bemused, Jeb shook it gingerly as Casey buried her face in her hands.
Blessed day, strangers! I'm Casey's guardian angel,
he said, holding his sword up like the Highlander.
Sworn to guide and protect, her destiny made manifest so that this wayward lamb might find her way back to the light.
Oh my God,
Casey said into her palm, her entire face turning beet red.
Now you're getting it,
Mike said with a grin. Chapter 17. Gear Up.
Ooh, magic gun,
Ron said, hovering around Jeb's construction. He didn't seem to begrudge him the half a mist lens he'd used to make it, instead simply being overexcited for the creation. I want to reiterate, Jeb said, holding it away from the necromancer's grasping hands, that this is not a magic gun. There is no projectile. Exactly like your wand, it makes an explosion at a set range. Ron deflated a little.
Yeah, but yours looks cooler.
Jeb fixed Ron with the withering stare he'd learned from his instructors in the army. Ron withered. The key difference is that anyone can use this, Jeb said, glancing at Casey. What's your level? The goth teen pointed at herself with a questioning look.
Yeah, you silly, Mike said.
Why should I tell you?
Casey asked, crossing her arms and scowling at Jeb. Ah, there it is. Teens had a tendency to confuse belligerence with toughness.
She doesn't have a level yet,
Mike said, the angel on her shoulder breaking the stalemate.
We'd be just tickled if you had an interest in helping my child.
Please stop calling me a child,
Casey said, jaw clenched.
All right, a couple quick tests. Then we'll see if we can... What was the word?
Cheese Casey with this. You guys are probably going to want to stand back in case it explodes. Ron had raised his hand with a grin until he was reminded of the very real danger of self-immolation. Jeb rested the pistol-shaped wand on a rock, set its range to max, then joined the rest of them hiding behind a nearby rock. He reached a thread of mist out and used it to pull the trigger.
Boom!
In the distance, a huge explosion roughly three times the size produced by Ron's original drop of mist shone bright for a fraction of a second before pummeling their eardrums with its force. The thousands of flying monsters circling the mountain grew agitated, but they didn't approach. I wonder what's stopping them, Jeb thought, looking up at them. Jeb jumped over the boulder and checked the state of the wand. No hotspots, no sign of any of the welds coming loose. In light of the size of that explosion, I'm going to put another safety feature on this thing.
He quickly welded a metal stopper into place right at the 80-foot range. Any closer than that, and the wand might cause some serious damage to the person firing it. He checked the 300-foot range, then eyed the sky. That one looks flammable. Jeb reached a single thick strand of mist out into the sky and snagged a bird-like creature with three heads. It squawked and flapped furiously, trying to escape his grasp, but he reeled it in with all the merciless force of an electric winch. Once it was 300 feet away, give or take, he closed one eye, aimed the wand at the distant target, and squeezed the trigger. Boom! The explosion was off by a dozen feet or so to the right, which wasn't bad, all things considered. The monster was still inside the blast radius. As the bird tumbled to the ground in a streak of flame, Jeb patted all sides of the wand, checking for hot spots before carefully unscrewing the handle and capacitor casing, making sure nothing had shifted or been in any way damaged. It paid to triple-check your weapon, especially in the case of a homemade one like this. Once Jeb was satisfied the wand wasn't going to blow up in anyone's hand, he closed up the handle and motioned for Casey to approach. The girl hesitantly approached and received the wand from him like it was a live snake. Mike looked on curiously from her shoulder. He briefly ran her through gun safety tips, in this case wand safety, and she followed along as best she could, her eyes wide with fear. Okay, relax your grip a bit. It's making you shake. You don't have to be tense. This thing doesn't have any recoil, Jeb said, correcting her stance. Line it up with your dominant eye. Don't put your finger on the trigger until you're ready to fire.
I know that,
she snapped in typical teen fashion. Jeb kept going. Use the pad of your finger, not the crook, Jeb said, pointing at his own finger to illustrate. A lot of people have a tendency to let the trigger rest in that crook behind the knuckle, but that pulls the barrel off target and makes your shots go wide.
God, I'm not dumb,
she said, shifting her grip to match his instructions while Mike put his fingers in his ears and whispered sing-song about taking the Lord's name in vain. Now, depending on how dumb this system is, you should get experience just for pulling the trigger. Let's get started.
Now?
Casey asked, her eyes wide. You got a better time? Jeb asked, raising a brow.
You can do it, Casey, Mike cheered. Draw your fiery blade and topple these ferocious beasts.
Jeb reached out with his mist and snagged another flyer out of the air. Here he comes, he said, pointing. Wait until he's about... Boom! Jeb winced at the early shot and waited until the echoes died down. Wait until he's at the same range that the other one was. This thing isn't a gun. The explosion is always going to be in the same spot.
Okay,
Casey said, peering at the approaching critter. When she determined it was in the right spot, she pulled the trigger again. Boom. I should make some earplugs or something, Jeb thought. Maybe our body will prevent tinnitus. The monster fell out of the sky, a smoking wreck.
I got two levels,
Casey said, eyes wide. Good. Let's try that a few more times. Get you to level 10 before we get you a weapon.
What?
Casey said, paling. You didn't think you'd get to keep the training wheels on forever, did you? Jeb asked.
But I just got them,
Casey protested, clutching the wand to her chest, no longer afraid of it. We need to make sure you're tough enough to run away if you have to, Jeb said with a placating tone. That wand only shoots 80 feet away at the closest. There might come a time when you're the only one around to protect little Casey. Do you want to be able to protect your daughter? She glanced at the wriggling infant with Amanda's hands acting as ear protection, then back to Jeb. Her eyes gained a certain amount of steel above and beyond teen angst.
I do.
Single moms grow up fast. Good. That's what this is for. On to the next one. Jeb snagged another flyer out of the air. They kept at it until Casey got to level 10. The girl dropped 7 points into body and 3 into mist, weathering the cramps and headache. Casey Thompson, unclassed, level 10, body 20, mist 7, nerve 8. Once that was done, they strapped the young mother into some medium armor and gave her a spear and shield. Under Amanda's watchful gaze, they power leveled the teen girl, with Jeb tossing monsters onto the side of the mountain in front of her hard enough to stun them, but not do too much damage. With Casey's first monster, she hesitated, almost losing a limb to the creature's maw before Jeb was able to pry it off her. After Amanda reattached the arm, an understandable amount of stress crying, and a visit to cuddle baby Casey, she went back to work. When the dark-haired teen met her second monster, she didn't hesitate, driving a spike through its eye. Jeb stood there and watched the teen grow in real time from a frightened girl into a killer of monsters. Still a brat, though. It was times like this he marveled at the flexibility of the human brain. He traced his thumb across the scar on his palm. I am alive.
I got it, Casey panted, leaning on her spear. I got level goddamn 20.
Mike covered his mouth with an alarmed expression. How many classes did you get? Jeb asked.
3.
Probably because the variety of her encounters was low. It was interesting to note Amanda had the most variety out of all of them, but not unexpected. What you got? Jeb asked. The girl silently reviewed her classes for a moment before something made her scowl. Giver of life, S. You gave birth in the impossible tutorial and kept the child alive. You're either really lucky or really tough. Maybe both. Plus 15 body, plus 10 mist, plus 10 nerve. Ability. Mommy's little helpers. Imbue objects with artificial sapient life. Objects are unerringly loyal to their creator. Mystic artillerist, B. Used mist-powered weapons to deliver long-range, high-impact devastation. Plus 10 mist, plus 5 nerve. Passive bonus to operating and maintaining mist-based weaponry. Ability, phantom shot. With an effort of will, you can cause ranged attacks, wands, or mist artillery to ignore non-magical, non-living obstacles. This includes armor and fortifications. Damsel, A. Somehow you kept getting rescued at the exact right time. Why not make a class of it? Plus 10 nerve, plus 10 mist. Passive boost to being rescued. Ability, favor. The user may imbue one object with their favor. If the user personally gives this token to someone of their own free will, the token raises their stats by 25%. Otherwise, the token increases its bearer's stats by 15%. This effect does not work on the damsel themselves, and it expires upon the damsel's death.
Which one should I pick?
Obviously not the damsel one, Jess said, arms crossed and scowling. Jeb cycled through the options in his head. They were all good in their own way. The greedy bastard in him kind of wanted her to pick damsel so Jeb could get his mist into the 80s in one fell swoop. Damsels must be traded like a potent currency. On the other hand, the mist artillerist looked real good at murdering people. Put a wand in her hand and she'd be able to fuck some shit up. They're all good, Jeb finally said with a shrug. I don't think you should feel too bad about picking any of them.
I pick Giver of Life.
Casey's eyes went wide, then she keeled over onto the ground, groaning in pain as the headache slash cramps slash overstimulus blindsided her. Sensible choice.
The mommy class?
Ron asked incredulously.
Well, from the sound of it, she can make the baby's diapers come to life and clean themselves. Do you want to change the baby's diapers?
Amanda said.
That is something I hadn't considered, Ron said.
Plus the ridiculous stat boosts, Jess said, nodding. Plus those, Jeb said. Off in the distance, Brett was meditating, trying to build his own mist core. It wasn't coming along very fast, but the soldier was driven. Being woefully behind everyone else was its own special motivation. Casey Thompson, Giver of Life, level 20. Body 35, mist 25, nerve 20. Jeb was sitting on the rock, all his various magical sundries laid out in front of him, as he pondered what to make next. I've still got a huge amount of worm lens and scarab lens. And flame lenses. Fiery scarab worm? Jeb thought. If it was possible to make flaming flies, it should be possible to make flaming worm scarabs. I need to figure out how these created monsters interact with the system. Do they have stats? If so, how does one affect them? The only thing I can think of is increasing the thickness of the lens. or adding multiple layers. We'll have to test it. He was sitting there, pondering his options, when Smartass flitted up and landed on his shoulder.
What you thinking about?
Smartass asked. Trying to figure out this mist stuff, Jeb said. We need every edge we can get.
You've got this grumpy look on your face,
Smartass said, making angry eyebrows with his fingers.
You weren't all serious when we first met. Where's the guy who scammed an entire clan of fairies?
He's gotta be an adult now, Jeb said, glancing up. Back in the safe zone, it was just me by myself, and it was a scam or die. I was shaken out of my rut by the circumstances. There just wasn't enough time to stop and let the fear catch up to me. But now? He motioned at the kids who were sitting around the camp and telling stories to keep themselves entertained. Humans weren't designed to struggle for their lives 24/7. Now I've got plenty of time to stew. He glanced up at Smartass. You know, 2 months before I came here, I tried to kill myself. Didn't take. Jeb shivered as a cold wind caressed the back of his neck. He glanced up to the smoking peak of the mountain and gave it the finger. And this fucking mountain keeps leering at me.
Huh?
Smartass cocked his head to the side. I don't think it's the smoke keeping the monsters at bay, Jeb said. Pretty sure this mountain is alive. I can feel it weighing down on me, looking at me. Having a high mist came with a few drawbacks, like viscerally knowing you were squatting on an evil entity's doorstep. He'd had strange dreams the last few days. Thankfully, the only other person who can feel it is Ron, and he's too young to have issues. Jeb motioned to Ron, where the ginger was cackling madly at Brett's fishing story.
Hmm.
Smartass crossed his arms in thought and did a little barrel roll in front of Jeb's face.
I've got an idea, Smartass said. As a fairy, I can cure your grumpiness, or at least treat it, but not for free.
Jeb raised an eyebrow. Oh yeah? How's that?
I can't tell you, or you'd do it for yourself. I need payment first,
Smartass said, holding out a hand and wiggling his fingers. It's worth a shot. What do you want?
Your fireball wand.
Try again.
The firefly lantern.
Not a chance.
A custom-built wand sized for fairies?
Uh-uh.
Come on, all it would take is some dust and a tiny piece of metal.
You're crazy if you think I'd give you the means to light things on fire, Jeb said, crossing his arms and scowling.
Cheapskate,
Smartass said, stomping his feet mid-air. How about a magic squirt gun? Jeb asked.
Ooh!
Smartass immediately brightened, fluttering around his head excitedly. Jeb pulled out the water lens and carved a small chunk off of it. All he had to do was make a tiny squirt gun out of steel, a little chamber for the water to manifest, and a hole a little bigger than pencil lead for it to squirt out of. In a matter of minutes, Jeb had a little squirt gun appropriately sized for a certain fairy's tiny, grabby hands. Smartass grunted, desperately reaching for the gun while Jeb kept it out of his reach. If you use this on me, I will take it away from you, Jeb said, trying to impress his seriousness on the flying pest.
I got it. Gimme!
Smartass said. Jeb handed the squirt gun to the mischievous fairy.
Yes!
Smartass chuckled evilly, running his hand over the shiny steel of his new toy. He aimed it at a nearby rock, and Jeb saw a flicker of mist get siphoned into the contraption. A thin beam of water shot out and dug into the ground, while the recoil sent Smartass tumbling violently away, water spraying in all directions.
Aye!
The fairy shrieked as he struggled to correct his flight before hitting the ground. The fairy came to a halt just before splatting on the ground like a bug on a windshield. He was panting, shivering, wide-eyed, and soaking wet.
That was awesome!
Up the pressure a bit more and it'd be a water cutter, Jeb thought. Well, Jeb said.
Well, what?
The fairy asked. Your side of the deal. You said you had a way to make me less grumpy.
Yes,
Smartass said, flying up to Jeb's shoulder again.
Stay still so I can work my magic.
Smartass leaned in close and planted a kiss on Jeb's cheek.
You did your best. Nobody blames you.
That was it? Jeb demanded.
You feel better?
Smartass asked. He did, actually. Jeb started laughing uproariously, slapping his knee. He kept going until he cried, and then he laughed some more. Casey.
Hey, guys,
Casey said as they watched Jeb's sudden gale of laughter from the other side of the fire.
I think I'm seeing a fairy. Are fairies a thing?
Amanda nodded.
They're a thing,
Ron said, glancing over at Jeb. The peg-legged man was half sobbing as the fairy patted him on the head.
They're not usually that nice, though.
The next day. It was Jeb's turn to watch the camp, and he found himself alone with Casey. She was humming to her baby as Jeb's homemade soup pot stirred itself. Mike was kicking his heels on her shoulder, relaxing while their clothes were washing themselves in a sapient bucket of water. It's like Beauty and the Beast up in here. Jeb was half tempted to suggest that she bring his wand to life so it could fire at its own discretion, but he was loath to let control of the powerful weapon slip away from him. It was like handing a stranger a brick of C4. You just don't do it. The way they were bouncing from task to her humming, Jeb was waiting for the animated objects to break into song and dance, but it never happened. Jeb pushed himself to his feet, and the humming stopped as Casey tensed. He sat across from Casey and tried the scarab stew, warmed by the fireflies.
Could use some salt,
Jeb said, giving her a half-hearted smile. Casey pointedly ignored him.
Where are you from, Casey?
Jeb asked.
New York.
Really?
Why do you care?
She asked.
I don't, really. I'm just trying to lower your defenses and psychologically manipulate you into not being so mean to me.
Jeb answered honestly.
I'm not...
She choked off her words at Jeb's raised brows, seemingly struggling internally. She had been mean to him, and it was more than she could rationalize